with all the investments we're doing in the quality infrastructure and the compliance capacities, why this is not really picking up and happening, that within this community, this slogan of accredited once, accepted it everywhere is not happening. I don't have the answer, but this is something maybe, again, back to us as international organization, we have to think about it and take some actions.
Accreditation, it's a way of life.
One of the actions that organizations are taking is to focus on issues of pressing importance.
What the customers really want out of their accredited certification.
I believe we have an impact on everyday's life.
It's important to be inclusive. It is important really to be open.
And that will be one additional way to ensure that the voice of industry and user is heard and recognized.
So hello and welcome to episode 4 of Accreditation Matters. This episode, we're talking about the importance of accreditation for IGOs, intergovernment organizations. So just to set the scene, I am Colin Christmas. I am the IEF Food Co-Convener and also part of IQNet Association. And on today's podcast, we have a number of honorable guests. We have Joseph Wozniak. He is the head of trade and sustainable development for the International Trade Center, the ITC, based out of Geneva. We have Dr. Margarita Corrales. She is the food safety officer for Pan America Health Organization, the PAH. We have Ali Badana, and he is the division chief for UNIDO. And last but not least, we have Steve Wern joining us, and he is the chairperson for Codex Alimentarius Commission. So I'd like to welcome my guests to this week's podcast. And with that, I just want to go through and ask some questions about how accreditation plays a crucial role in food systems, really ensuring the safety, quality and sustainability in the food supply chain. So maybe starting with you, Steve, could you give me a little bit of perspective about how accreditation delivers mutual trust and how you work with accreditation at Codex?
Sure. So I suppose my short answer would be that accreditation is an integral part of the ecosystem that, as you say, delivers mutual trust and also assurance in the application of international standards. And that's vital for facilitating trade in safe food and for contributing to global food security.
Wonderful, Steve. Thanks for that. And now maybe over to you, Margarita. Can you give us some insights from your organization, a Pan America Health Organization?
Yes, sure. We are the regional office of the World Health Organization here in the Americas. And from here, we serve as secretariat ex officio of the Inter-American Network of Food Analysis Laboratories. We are working with a network of laboratories for over 26 years, and it was agreed by different international organizations and member states to create this network. And actually, through this network, we support the laboratories to improve their quality systems to achieve ISO 17025017 accreditation, also encourage the use of reference methodologies in lab testing, and also we coordinate an information and communication system with the laboratory members so that we can promote technical cooperation through South-South technical cooperation mechanisms. And we conduct trainings, proficiency tests, among other activities.
Wonderful, thanks for that, Margarita. And over to you, Ali, from a UNIDO perspective, how do you see accreditation supporting everything you do at UNIDO?
Thank you, Colin. I think from UNIDO's side, given our mandate for promoting industrial development, you know, no one can imagine industrializations without accreditation. So for us, it's like the backbone of mainstreaming trust and confidence within the industrial ecosystem, which goes, you know, across all sectors, food and non-food. And hopefully in this discussion, we could even highlight more about how accreditation plays a major and critical role when it comes to food systems and food supply chain or agro-industrialization in general.
Ali, thanks very much for that. And I'd just like to go over to Joseph now. And from the International Trade Center perspective, how do you see accreditation supporting the work that you do?
Thanks, Khalid, and happy to be with you today, and thanks for the invitation. So maybe before kind of addressing that question, just a brief overview in terms of the International Trade Center, what we do and who we are. So we're a joint UN-WTO organization, and we work really to improve trade competitiveness and to actually grow trade opportunities for small businesses in developing countries. So we work a lot in the food and agricultural sectors, and that is able to kind of influences our work, and we really help to try to improve the business environment and business performance of these small businesses. So when it comes to your question in terms of accreditation, when it comes to the issues of quality systems, this is, I would say, fundamental in terms of market access, right? In terms of really helping the SMEs that we work with, the small businesses we work with to export successfully. So it's a core part of our work and our mandate. I would say just to, you know, for the listeners out there today in terms of the podcast, I mean, my work at ITC focuses primarily on these voluntary sustainability standards and related codes of conduct that cover environmental, social, labor, and also quality and food safety requirements. And so these standards are not, and it's important to mention this too in the context of our discussion today, these standards or norms or codes are not really covered directly by the WTO because they're not developed and implemented, or I should say they are developed and implemented by private organizations and industry groups rather than governments and or intergovernmental bodies. And so they're outside of the WTO process. However, it's important to note that these private standards can have significant impacts on trade, really. So they can influence market access, given their requirements and their costs. They can influence consumer preferences, and they can actually influence as well, I would say, production methods. So I would say the WTO has acknowledged their importance in terms of the private standards and encourages its members to ensure that private standards don't create unnecessary trade barriers. And so that's also where ITC comes in to kind of help provide support to SMEs to deal with the requirements of these different types of standards and so forth. Two more points, if I may. One is that since we started this work on the private sector or the private standard sides about a decade ago, we've noticed a big change in the regulatory landscape. There's been a big shift. Whereas before, I mean, these private standards, these codes could be considered, I would say, for lack of a better word, they were very niche, focusing on maybe small segments of the market, like organic, for example. Now they are really they've become quite mainstream, and even becoming one could say potential accompanying measures to public regulations such as the Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive in the EU context. And we've all heard the ESG buzzword, et cetera. So this is really out there as well. What does this mean for us? It means that we need to make sure that these standards are credible, and that the certification or the verification bodies that support them are also credible, because we don't want this to be a merely kind of tick the box or a type of greenwashing type situation.
Joseph, I think really good comments, and I appreciate the introduction and a little bit of background of what the ITC is doing and what you're doing within there, especially around the voluntary sustainability standards. Thank you for that. So good. So that's a little bit of an introduction from my guests today. I'm going to do a little bit of a deeper dive with each of them. And I'm going to start with you, Margarita, in terms of just like to understand a little bit more about how accreditation plays a role for the Pan American Health Organization, your work with the WHO. Really interested to know, you mentioned about the work you do with accredited laboratories as well. So maybe you can give us a little bit more insights of what's working and how you see things on your side.
Sure. So actually, we work with the laboratories to increase their capacity to achieve ISO accreditation. And actually, this is very important that laboratories create reliable data that is used generally for the joint FAO-WHO Expert Committee on Food Additives. And actually, this committee performs risk assessment and provides advice to the different organizations and member states and CODEX to set the, and develop their standards and guidelines. Specifically, there are different committees for food additives, contaminants in food, etc. No, and this actually, all these CODEX standards that they are developed through this expert committee and the CODEX Alimentarius, actually the committee provides scientific advice to CODEX Alimentarius, are generally applied under the sanitary and phytosanitary agreement of the WTO to ensure fair trade practices. Actually, also WHO has available a global database to collect data on food contaminants. In short, it's called GEMS Food, and actually collects levels of contaminants in food and trends. And actually this data is used for risk assessments that later are used for CODEX Alimentarius to develop their standards.
Margarita, that's great. It's really good to get that insight. I understand there was a case study in Ecuador around chocolate. Maybe you can give us a little bit more information on the work you've done in Ecuador.
Yes, exactly. Actually, cadmium is natural occurring contaminant in soil, air, and water. And unfortunately, Ecuador has areas with a big amount of this heavy metal in soil. And then it's absorbed by the plants and it comes in low concentrations in cocoa beans. Actually, in 2019, the European Union regulation set some cadmium levels that they were very low. And actually, this could cause a restriction for Ecuadorian products to enter the EU. And then actually the region made a very important exercise. Actually, it was led by Ecuador to analyze a lot of cocoa products and for cadmium, and actually conduct all the data exposure of these cocoa products. And at the end, these limits were modified. So in CODEX Alimentarius discussions, because it was based on the total solid content of the cocoa, because normally chocolate is not consumed raw or pure, it's combined with other ingredients. And that's why these levels were modified and specified so that it's considered also other ingredients in the matrices. And it was a very success story because actually this doesn't hinder the export of Ecuadorian chocolate products or cocoa products to the EU. And additionally, now the CODEX Alimentarius Committee for Food Contaminants developed a code of practice to reduce the absorption of cadmium in cocoa beans in Ecuador. And there are a series of recommendations that is being applied here in the region, not only in Ecuador, but also other areas that have this problem. And it's a success story from the region that we are really proud to tell. And actually, it helped a lot to work together as a region to achieve this goal.
Margarita, I think that's a great case study. I think that's really re-emphasizes the work that's done, that data needs to be trusted, and ultimately it facilitates trade and helps a country like Ecuador work with the European Union, which is really important. So I think the average consumer eating their chocolate bar today in the European Union may realize they have a lot to thank you for in your organization. So thank you for that. So I'd like to now turn over to Joseph and do a little bit of deeper dive about the work of the ITC. As you mentioned, the linkage with the WTO, the World Health Organization, and working with the technical barriers to trade. And maybe you can give me a little bit more about the work you do and how accreditation is helping with all of that.
Sure. So as I think I mentioned at the top of the podcast, I mean, we find that from a technical assistance perspective, getting it right in terms of the accreditation of labs is a critical piece in the infrastructure, but also for market access and to ensure that SMEs in developing countries can export their goods to major markets like the EU or North America. So, in other words, it's essential for these countries to have competent and internationally recognized quality infrastructure systems. So ITC, we have a whole team that really works directly with developing country partners to strengthen national quality infrastructure services. And that essentially enforce compliance with sanitary and phytosanitary or SPS measures and also the technical regulations. So we find that this work is super important because if we can reduce what we call these kind of non-tariff measures or non-tariff barriers, such as SPS issues, we can and this is also key, we can improve, I would say, regional integration and regional trade between bordering countries, right? So a good example of this specifically is the EAC, the Eastern African Community, right? So how can we improve the resilience of these local institutions so we can really better link farmers to consumers across borders and mitigate effects that accrue in countries. Such as periodic national food shortages or food price spikes. And we saw this during the COVID pandemic. So I think these are some specific examples of what we do. And then a lot of the work that we do when it comes to these SMEs, we can communicate that to the TPT committee at the WTO and also exchange experiences. So I think it's a very virtuous process there. Now, as I also mentioned, most of my work is really focused on the voluntary sustainability standard side, right? And so this is also, I would say, when it comes to accreditation the accreditation of certification or verification bodies, one thing to say for sure is that it is not consistent across the board with these various standards. So the devil is in the details, right? Some of these standards or these codes have an actual oversight on the verification, the certification bodies, and there's rules that are kind of baked into the standard on certification bodies and the governance thereof. Others don't have any of that, right? And many voluntary schemes require, for example, conformity to ISO 17000:011 or IAF accreditation for that matter, and others don't. So again, the devil's really in the details here. So to kind of give you a specific example of how ITC is trying to help with this, or at least to provide more transparency on this or clarity on this. So we have at ITC developed the Standards Map database and website. And this is a freely accessible tool online, standardsmap.org, which provides all types of users. So from small businesses to researchers to government employees, you name it, private sector companies, it allows them access to free, credible, neutral, comparable data on these voluntary codes and private standards, right? And so today on the Standards Map system, we have about 345 of these initiatives that can be compared and contrasted. And many of them, I would say at least 60%, if not more, are really specific to the food and agricultural sector, right? So stuff we're talking about today. And so with Standards Map, users can search under, there's different areas. It's quite a complex tool, but we have a user tutorial. You can look under like the how to comply and the governance criteria sections of the website for more information on the specifics of certification and verification body certification under accreditation. So I think that will help. And then I would say one final point, if I may, Colin, just to kind of give you like a real world experience of how this kind of how this works, I guess, when it comes to sourcing of agricultural commodities and food products. So we do a lot of work in terms of benchmarking or advisory services to pre-competitive industry platforms across a variety of commodities, but also we work for international global food companies. And this is for pure reasons to kind of move the needle when it comes to sustainability. But we provide benchmarking to understand, to help these firms when they go source at the upstream level, to understand what good looks like from a criteria perspective. And I can tell you, without naming specific companies, that when it comes to the issue of accreditation, this is something they definitely look for. It comes up quite often in our benchmarking work. And so what does that mean? That means that it's A, taken seriously, almost as a prerequisite for firms when they look to source. So it's something that I think is a good sign that there's a shift away from kind of, tick the box, or also, greenwashing in terms of the verification. They're looking for verified data products that are coming from standards with reliable certification and verification mechanisms.
Joseph, I think that's really fascinating, the work you're doing there and the linkages between supporting developing markets, the ITC, the WTO, and removing those technical barriers to trade and working out what is important and what looks good is super important. You touched upon greenwashing, and ultimately this seems to be some challenges. A lot of organizations are challenging if there's greenwashing going on in supply chains, and ultimately the work that accreditation is doing there. One highlight I would say is right now is the proposal for a directive on green claims, and that yes. Proposal was put together in 2023. So the intended directive will be that if you're making a green claim within the European Union, that has to come from an accredited source. So I think we may see a reinforcement of accreditation, and hopefully that builds trust to avoid any greenwashing accusations that may come against organizations and their supply chains. Any thoughts on that?
No, I would agree with you on that totally. I think that there's this movement inside of the European Union through this green product claims directive, but also through the emerging kind of the European sustainability reporting directive as well, to be able to link what is happening at the upstream level to the kind of buying firm or the lead firm when it comes to reporting. And I think this is it's really about making sure that we have clear, understandable, harmonized reporting and claims directives where we can. And that I think will over the course of time, it will kind of weed out the non-credible standards, the ones that are not rigorous, the ones that are more marketing tick the box efforts, as opposed to those that are more, let's say, rigorous in terms of on the ground. But I think also one of the areas that we need to really focus on as well is the complexity. This is a bit off topic, but it's important from at least from our perspective, is that also the data that comes from the upstream producer, that data has to be somehow verifiable to make sure that it is also correct, right? Because it's one of these things if we're not getting reliable data, and also we don't have the capacity locally to understand what this data is and how to capture it, then also that's a point of failure that we need to guard against. So yes, it's great for the claims directive. It's great for the reporting frameworks. However, capacity locally also has to be developed in terms of how to collect this data and communicate it up or downstream, I should say, is also quite important.
Yeah, I think, Joseph, you're definitely not going off topic with in terms of the data piece. So obviously, with our podcast, we're looking at food systems. So we're looking at the food safety, the worker safety, the environmental aspects, the sustainability, but also the credibility of the data. And ultimately, the data that goes through the food supply chains has to be credible, has to be trusted as well. And that's where there's a lot of work that's going on within international standards setting organizations, within the IAEF and ILAC, to make sure that data is trusted. We've talked about green claims, but ultimately we're also in a world where climate disclosures are now being forced at a regional and a government level. And those climate disclosures will, I believe, go in a similar position to the green claims, that it will come from verification that's accredited. Examples being ISO 14064, which is an environmental standard for greenhouse gas disclosures, and ISO 17. ISO 14067. So these are the standards, I think, that will tie into the climate disclosures more than ever before. So Joseph, thank you very much for that that summary. With that, I'd like to go over to Steve and get a better do a deeper dive in terms of your role at Codex and how you're looking at standards and requirements and equivalents within countries and maybe even the digitalization and data transfer that Joseph touched upon. So over to you, Steve.
Sure. I mean, for those of you not familiar with Codex, it's the joint food standards program of two UN bodies, the Food and Agriculture Organization and the World Health Organization. And so it exists in that sort of multilateral environment, and standards are developed and agreed usually by consensus by its 188 member countries. And there are thousands of Codex standards, all openly published on the Codex website, available free of charge to users and to anyone who may be interested. So commodity standards for everything from chili sauce to infant formula and safety standards and guidelines, such as the limits and codes of practice for cadmium in chocolate and cocoa products that Margarita referenced earlier. And so these then are used by countries and incorporated into their national laws and used by the food trade as well as standards for trade between trading partners up and down the food chain. But as Ali hinted in his opening comments, Codex standards cover food control systems as well. I mean, to one acronym I'll use, which is CCFIX, is the Codex Committee that was set up to develop international standards in relation to import export certification and inspection. But that committee also now develops and sets guidelines that relate, as I said, to the totality of national food control systems, not just inspection and certification, its original remit, but also traceability, laboratory analysis, regulatory systems and approaches, and judgment of equivalence of the level of public health protection that those elements of a national food control system provide in practice for food that's in international trade. And to understand a bit more about the role of accreditation, let's look at one set of Codex guidelines, which is about the use of information by regulatory authorities from voluntary third-party assurance schemes. So those are the programs that are set up in the trade by independent bodies that set third-party verification for suppliers and manufacturers of food against published standards and then certify that those products, that those manufacturing sites are in conformity. And those schemes cover everything too. They cover many things that Codex standards do, so the control of contaminants through food production and manufacturing processes, right through to the nutritional information that appears on pack for consumers, and also some things that currently sit outside Codex standards, and increasingly, as Joseph has said, issues like sustainability claims. And data on membership of those programs and conformity status isn't only useful for commercial customers. The data from those programs, underpinned by accreditation, is increasingly used by regulatory authorities too, with growing confidence, in order to make regulatory decisions, for example, about the frequency or intensity of inspections of food premises. So accreditation underpins the assurance schemes. The assurance schemes are used in the trade, and the data is also used to make regulatory decisions. And turning to those decisions by national regulatory authorities, they need trust and evidence, the two main ingredients in order to facilitate trade. And the trade in food and agricultural products is of really high economic value. And when it comes to trade, in my experience, often it may be a question of whether different systems of national controls provide equivalent levels of protection. People ask themselves, or start from the standpoint of why it won't or why it can't, rather than how it can. I mean, protectionist behaviour hidden behind differentiated standards. So the more we can standardize the process and support transparency, the better. And so we shouldn't underestimate the value of risk and evidence-based codex standards in providing a template and a process for judging equivalence, and then accredited systems of control providing the evidence that can be judged as part of that process. And the final thing I'll say, I think, in this section is, and it goes a bit to your point on digitization, that, I mean, the work in codex is dynamic. Not quite got as far as standardizing digital approaches, but there are plenty in the commercial sphere operating globally who do. But one thing we've done recently, informed by the rapid development of practice really throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, is we've adopted guidelines for the use of remote and virtual audit and inspection for the purpose of verification of compliance with official controls. And there may be, because it's a remote process and people aren't there in the plant, they don't have the same, often, sights and smells that you do have in a food processing plant. There it seems that accreditation is even more important to underpin the trust that people have in the application of those newer processes. Thanks, Colin. Back to you.
So Steve, it's fascinating, the work that's going on there, and you're touching a broad range of subjects. You mentioned about a standardized process, and that standardization, I think, is key, especially within this arena, a global arena, and the virtual assessments and inspections. So it's great that we're getting to a more standardized approach around that, and the role that accreditation can be to support it. A lot of obviously changes happened during the pandemic. Technology is improving, and that's where the digitalization piece comes in. And then ultimately the data transfer that is going to facilitate trade as well. So Steve, thanks for that. Now I'd like to move over to Ali and get a little bit more of an idea from your side about how accreditation is playing a role for UNIDO, which is supporting food systems and industrial development. Maybe you can give us a little bit of a deeper dive of the work you're doing in this space. Thanks, Ali.
Sure, Colin. Thank you. I think I will complement what the colleagues have mentioned. I think Margareta nicely showed the example of how accreditation for testing labs ensure the credibility and trust in the data they generate, which feeds into risk assessments, feeds into changing world standards, and how this could impact simply the trade facilitation in the world. And I think with Joseph also touching on how SMEs need to have access to credible, trusted conformity assessment services so they can comply with market requirements. And with Steve putting the standards on the top of this, which is the starting point for any conformity assessment is we start with a standard. And this is how UNIDO looks at it when we try to support our member states in building their simply competitive sectors. Like when we look at the quality system, or we call it national quality infrastructure, and try to help member states in investing in a modern, credible quality infrastructure system, and specifically for the food supply chains, here we talk again for the food safety system, It's not an easy thing to do. But I mean, it's so expensive exercise to support specifically developing countries to have modern, credible quality infrastructure system and a food safety or food control system in place. So the food supply chains could be competitive, could be safe, sustainable, and can simply operate efficiently. In doing this, we have to make some choices with member states. And these choices are so difficult. Do we start with investing in the metrology system, which ensure traceability of measurements, or we start with their certification capacities, or with setting up their national standard bodies? It's really a difficult exercise. But I, from our experience over the last 40 years supporting member states in specifically building national quality infrastructures, I think accreditation should be the starting point after standard setting. So if we break down the pillars of the quality infrastructure system, you know, I think the standard setting is the key function that the country should start and operate. But I think what follows this should be the accreditation, because then you can get any conformity assessment service right from the very beginning. And guess what? From our experience, we could claim that the cheapest investment will be in setting up accreditation systems in the country. It's not expensive as setting up a standard body or setting up a metrology center or setting up testing functions in the country. So that's always our advice. you know, try to invest as early as possible with setting an accreditation system that will ensure any conformity assessment service comes later on is already following the standards set by the accreditation system. So that's the way we look at it. Another thing also, when we speak about food systems or food supply chains in a specific, here becomes the accreditation role in ensuring the safety of the food products are even more critical. So the accreditation has kind of a double role, and it becomes more delicate and sensitive, especially like when Joseph mentioned that, you know, SMEs, they have to comply with certain private voluntary schemes. Here, the accreditation has to play a role, which, in my opinion, not yet playing the right role in ensuring, you know, do we accredit these schemes and standards, or because they are free in the market. So I guess the accreditation will pick up more and more relevance and more importance as we speak, especially that, you know, you mentioned the EU regulations. I would add to what you mentioned, the new regulation or even published on the packaging and packaging waste. And there's a big article about verification and certification, which means all the packaging related claims need to be also verified. So here comes again, the certification, the credibility, the accreditation. So that just, I would say from our perspective as UNIDO. So let me finish by maybe from the lessons learned that you will never achieve a competitive, safe, and sustainable food supply chain without quality infrastructure and a food safety system. And if you don't have an accreditation, this system will be broken. So that's why I think I'm not in the accreditation. I'm not part of IAF or ILAC, but we advocate for the importance of accreditation in ensuring that whatever investments you do in quality infrastructure or in food control systems are actually meaningful and they bring the credibility or trust you need in the conformity assessment services. So I'll leave it at this point, but maybe later on I have some follow-up points on what Joseph and Steve have mentioned as well.
Ali, I really appreciate your insights from a UNIDO perspective and ultimately how the work you're doing supporting food systems and industrial development. I think that when we look at food systems, the future state where there's going to be over 9.5 billion people on the planet around 2050 is going to be the real challenge is do the current systems that we have in place today, will they work in a future state? And you touch upon the role that harmonization and standardization and accreditation is going to do with that to make sure that there's credibility and trust in the supply chain. So with that, the IAF and ILAC are forward thinking in many ways, and the theme for this year's World Accreditation Day is empowering tomorrow and shaping the future. So really trying to look ahead 10, 20, 30 years of what needs to be done, how do we shape the future, and how does accreditation play that critical part to reinforce the credibility and trust that we need in terms of things like global trade and supporting food systems. So that's going to be a World Accreditation is on June 9th, so take a look for that. But with that, I'd just like to go through and get some final thoughts and comments from the group, especially around what Ali mentioned about things like the importance of the quality infrastructure and accreditation in terms of food support systems. What have we heard today from the other guests that resonated, or what points would you just like to reinforce? And maybe we'll go back to you, Margarita, and any final thoughts on your side?
Well, I'm just emphasizing what this was already said by our speakers today. Also, actually, if laboratories are not accredited, so actually they don't produce reliable results, and this can hamper trade and can create some problems, and also it creates public distrust. So it's important that laboratories are accredited and create reliable results. And also not only for food producers, but also manufacturers to comply with regulations, and also to have a strong, robust food control system that actually the food monitoring systems are reliable. So what you are identifying in a matrix as an hazard is real there, and this only can be achieved by robust testing, accredited labs. And also it's very important accredited labs for early detection of outbreaks. No, imagine you have an important outbreak, you need to identify the food and the hazard. And it's important that these results are reliable to identify exactly which hazard you are testing, no? And actually, this is very important for food control systems. And it was discussed here together with trade that very extensively discussed here. And that's it from my side. Thank you, Colin. Back to you.
Margarita, thank you. Good recap and summary there. Joseph, over to you for final thoughts or comments.
Thanks, Colin. I guess I would have maybe three points to make when it comes to the voluntary side of the whole discussion today. First, I would say it's important in my view to raise awareness at the policymaker level in terms of the interplay between these voluntary schemes and the regulatory requirements and the changing landscape there. I think this is more and more critical as imports are becoming conditioned essentially on production requirements that pertain to environmental protection and labor requirements, right? So that, I think that's the first thing. Second thing is support to developing countries to develop national or local sustainability initiatives that are aligned with international frameworks, such as the OECD Responsible Business Conduct Guidelines. And this is, why is this important? Because we have to develop the capacity locally. We just can't, you know, import it from abroad. We have to really develop a local capacity, in my view, at the local level, at the national level, to integrate these sustainability practices across the entire economy, and not just the export sector. I think too often, these standards are applicable just to exports, not to domestic domestic trade or regional trade. And so I think there to broaden the benefit and the competitiveness of local economies, we need to do that. And third and last, I guess, last point would be to move toward an appropriate set of aligned or harmonized product standards that both promote sustainable outcomes that we're all looking for, but also provide, this is really important from ITC, provide good trade opportunities, market access, and income for developing countries, not to leave them behind. This is, I think, there's a strong risk of trade diversion in many cases, given this regulatory push when it comes to these issues of environmental and social compliance. And so I think really looking toward this ability to align or harmonize is key. Now, I realize this is not much easier said than done. However, I think there are initiatives out there that are aligned in this view or that agree with this viewpoint. And I think one example would be a project that the WWF is working on, which is this development of Codex Planetarius, which is interesting to follow. And so perhaps there's momentum there. But I would say those are my three takeaways or points to go forward. Thank you.
Joseph, thanks for that summary. I think you put an emphasis on the importance of international guidelines, and that just brings to mind there's the new WTO guideline to support conformity assessment in international trade, the GTBT54. From my side, it looks like a very much welcome addition for the conformity assessment community as well, which I think is important for the work that we do at IAF. So, Joseph, thanks once again. Over to you, Steve. Final thoughts on your side.
Thanks. Well, the thing that's resonating for me is what you said, Colin, about the theme for World Accreditation Day this year being empowering tomorrow and shaping the future, which seems to be right on trend because the world is changing faster than ever. And we need to focus on how the quality infrastructure and accreditation can best support food system transformation. And to put the question more simply, I think, and to agree with much of what Joseph has said, if we all want and need food systems that are more resilient, more equitable, and more sustainable, how do we measure, demonstrate, and then communicate that consistently across both regulatory controls and voluntary initiatives? It's a question I think we all need to start really grappling with.
Steve, thank you very much for that. And I think that you're exactly right. We don't have all the answers. And I think it's important to ask these type of questions And ultimately, that's what the podcast is here for today, is to facilitate dialogue, ask the questions, and to collaborate with some of these big challenges that we have with food system transformation needs over the next 10, 20, 30 years. So, Steve, thank you very much for that. It's much appreciated. And then Ali, final thoughts on your side from what we've discussed today.
Sure. I just put forward two main things. I think one related to the slogan of YF, which you mentioned, which looks for tomorrow and the future. I would really say that also while looking for the future, we still need to look a bit in the, you know, for backwards, and I try to challenge ourselves of why the old slogans of accredited once, accepted everywhere is not fully implemented. And I think that's something up to us, mainly the international organization, where we took the mandate of helping member states to try to build their capacities. I think we have to question ourselves why this is not maybe happening. When Joseph mentioned in the East African communities, with all the investments we're doing in the quality infrastructure and the compliance capacities, well, why this is not really picking up and happening, that within this community, this slogan of accredited once, accepted it everywhere is not happening. I don't have the answer, but this is something maybe, again, back to us as international organization, we have to think about it and take some actions. The second thought is related to, I think, what also Joseph and Steve just mentioned on the voluntary standards around the compliance with market requirements. And I think advocating for developing countries, and I think there's a great know-how and a big deal of experience with these private certification schemes and standards that they brought to the world. But I think it's time now to look at it carefully and also advocate for how do we build national voluntary schemes at country level and regional level in developing countries, so we can build this within their national quality infrastructure, so they have their own private, third-party, voluntary standard schemes that complements the regulators in the country, which is something critical in these countries because they cannot simply look after every single thing they need. They need to work together. And I think that's the true meaning of shared responsibility, right? I mean, we keep saying that food safety and accreditation is a shared responsibility, but that's the true meaning of it at a country level in developing countries, where complementing the regulatory efforts in advancing compliance across value chains and supply chains, that also the third parties in these countries, whether the private sector, the academia, the industry associations, could complement this. And I believe the voluntary schemes are a good option for this. And I think Steve mentioned about the CCFX guidelines, which now give us an opportunity and certain guidelines on how to do this in the right way. So these are the two maybe thoughts I will leave with all of us, not with you only, Colin, because that's up to all of us as well. Thank you.
Ali, I think I'm smiling here because I think you've really asking some very challenging questions and holding us all accountable on the current state and what opportunities lie ahead of us to create a future state where we have to support a bigger population and ultimately have to streamline some of the things that we're doing today. So I think those are the challenges to the community, to the listeners. And as Ali said, that it's not just one person that's going to solve that. We don't have all of the answers. And that's my role here for the podcast series, really, is to facilitate these discussions. And I've really appreciated the dialogue today with Joseph, Marguerite, Ali and Steve. It's been a really enjoyable discussion. And I'm learning a lot during the process as well. And long may it continue. So with that, this brings an end to the podcast series. We've had four podcasts talking about the IEF and ILAC's work supporting accreditation. And we've had a number of different guests over the four podcasts. And I certainly thank everyone's participation today and thank for the previous participants in the previous podcasts as well. As a listener, if you stuck with us through four podcasts, congratulations. Hopefully you've learned some things as well and had some important takeaways that makes you have a better understanding of accreditation, of what the work that's happening within the food sector, across food safety, across sustainability, environmental, across digitalization, worker safety, and so on. We really are looking at the whole quality infrastructure of food systems and food systems as well. Last but not least, if you want to learn a little bit more about the IAEF, the IAEF website, there's a series of brochures that discuss all of the work that we do, and ultimately you'll get a flavour of that as well. So, and last but not least, I'll just remind you, the World Accreditation Day is on June 9, Empowering Tomorrow and Shaping the Future. And as I mentioned, if you've listened today, please spread the word about the work that we're doing. Listen to some of the challenges that's come up from the discussions over the four podcasts, and we'll continue the dialogue. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Colin, for this.
Thanks a lot, Colin. Take care, everyone.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.